this is 5. And it is also lesson 5. In the previous lesson, we discussed the scientific validity of psychology. We concluded that while some of the more peripheral aspects of psychology were scientifically valid and therefore could be helpful in the counseling process, the influence of the more expansive hypotheses of psychology on our society have been counterproductive, calling into question the scientific validity and benefit of these aspects of psychology. This left the biblical counselor with the burden of examining each psychological conclusion to determine its validity. This has led to the question of whether we might ease that burden by determining whether some categories within the field of psychology are more scientifically reliable than others. In other words, rather than looking at each scientific finding case by case, can we categorize psychology between more scientific segments and less scientific segments so that we can make that determination in a more general way rather than looking at every little scientific finding. And this is going to be the goal of the present lesson. Psychology is a huge and multifaceted field. There are many different subfields contained within the scope of psychology. For example, social psychology, educational psychology, industrial psychology, research psychology, etc. The work of psychology is carried out in many venues. For example, the laboratory, the educational setting, the hospital, and the private practice, just to name a few. Therefore, psychology can be categorized in many ways. For the purpose of our study, the most meaningful categorization of psychology has to do with its rather distinct division into what we might label research psychology and psychotherapy, that is, the research and application aspects of psychology. Under the heading of research psychology, I am including all types of psychology that have as their primary objective advancing our understanding of the psychological aspects of a human being that use scientific research tools for that purpose. This usually involves a formal study that identifies a specific population and evaluates characteristics of that population statistically, often noting the interaction between an independent and a dependent variable and seeking to control for influences that would skew the results. By psychotherapy, I'm referring to a process that is defined by three criteria. First, it is essentially a counseling-type process. That is, it seeks to help people by interacting with them on a personal basis. The primary tool utilized by this process is talking. Second, this counseling process specifically utilizes psychological concepts to help people. Third, this process has as its primary objective to help the individual deal with some aspect of his personality that is troubling him. That is, it deals with psychological problems. This last criterion differentiates between psychotherapy and more practical approaches to helping people. For example, we would not view financial counseling as psychotherapy because it is not dealing with a personality issue per se. Counseling that seeks to discover some personality problem that prompts a person to spend too much and it offers remedies that will help him curb his spending would be considered psychotherapy, but specialized input on techniques of financial management would not be. Thus, in this lesson, we will be considering what are no doubt the two major categories related to psychology, research psychology and psychotherapy. The research/application approach to categorizing psychology does not make for an entirely neat division. Let me note three exceptions. First, some researchers may become involved in application as part of their research, and likewise, some psychotherapists are always seeking to learn in the process of doing therapy. Nonetheless, most psychological work leans distinctly toward one or the other of the above objectives. So usually a person is either seeking to do research or seeking to do therapy. In addition, since psychology is such a large and varied field, some expressions of psychology do not fall into either of the categories described above. For example, some psychologists may teach without being involved in research. Industrial psychologists may seek to maximize productivity rather than help people deal with their problems. Consequently, though in the process they may seek both to learn more and help people with their problems, their ultimate interest is not therapy, but productivity. Perhaps the most significant exception to the researcher/psychotherapist or researcher/application categorization of psychology is found in those who use psychological approaches to help people with their problems in ways that we would not label as psychotherapy, that do not meet the three criteria mentioned earlier. Psychiatrists, for example, primarily dispense medications, a practice which we would not view in and of itself to constitute psychotherapy because it is not a counseling process per se. That is, change is not sought primarily through talking with the counselee. Likewise, we would not view those working with children with learning disabilities as doing psychotherapy because we would not view the learning disabled child as having a psychological problem per se. Those psychologists helping a child with dyslexia, we would not view as doing psychotherapy. Therefore, not all psychological applications fall within the realm of psychotherapy. Nevertheless, the most numerous, prominent, and visible application of psychology is found in the psychotherapist working in private practice, hospitals, in group therapy, or some other venue, or conveying his insights through self-help books and seminars. Let's look at the uniqueness of psychology in relationship to these categories, this categorization of the research and application segments of psychology. This research application division is a common one, found in almost every discipline. In dealing with the natural world, we have physicists, chemists, and others who have as their objective the pursuit of knowledge. In the area of application, we have engineers and technicians applying the findings of these researchers in building and manufacturing. So in the natural sciences, we have the researchers and then the engineers doing the application. Likewise, in the field of medicine, we have those doing research, such as the scientists working for pharmaceutical companies. While on the application side, we have doctors and medical technicians working in family practices and hospitals, seeing patients, doing surgery, and applying our knowledge of medicine in other ways. However, psychology is substantially different than other fields because with psychology, the work of the researcher and that of the psychotherapist, the one who primarily does the application, is far less connected than with other disciplines. In fact, there is almost a dichotomy between the two, between the research element and the application element. In medicine, for example, the researcher develops new drugs, equipment, or procedures, and the doctor uses them. The researcher's work normally leads to the development of new drugs, equipment, and procedures utilized by the doctor at the application stage. As soon as the pharmaceutical company gets a new medication developed and approved by the FDA, it is in the hands of the doctor for treatment of his patients. However, with psychology, the tie between the work of the researcher and that of the psychotherapist is not nearly so close. For the most part, what the researcher discovers is not what the psychotherapist applies. Rather, to a great extent, researchers deal with one body of knowledge while psychotherapists deal with another, largely unrelated body of knowledge. Psychotherapists primarily do their work based on personality theories. Personality theories are more expansive constructs about hypotheses dealing with the essence of personality and how it functions, why people have problems, and how these problems can be solved. For example, Freudian psychology postulates that the major aspect of the human personality is the unconscious, and that this unconscious dimension of the personality plays a controlling role and is therefore responsible for our behavioral, emotional, and ultimately relational problems. Therefore, solving these problems requires a psychoanalyst who is trained in working with the unconscious. These are only a few of Freud's major concepts. His system of understanding people and working with their problems is very expansive and complex and includes pronouncements related to a wide variety of the most profound aspects of human nature. The reason that psychotherapists utilize these global theories is that a comprehensive understanding of the human being is needed in order to deal with most behavioral, emotional, and relational problems. In other words, if we're going to help people in a counseling setting, we have to have some sort of a global theory, some theory that understands the human personality in totality. By providing an understanding of how the human personality works, these theories also suggest the reasons why the malfunctions take place and how to fix it. In other words, in order to do psychotherapy, the psychotherapist must view the human being through the eyes of some comprehensive therapeutic model that informs him about how the human personality works. That is, psychotherapy requires a personality theory. These personality theories that provide the foundation for the work of a psychotherapist have not and cannot be generated utilizing scientific techniques. While discrete parts of the personality theory can be tested scientifically, their major presuppositions, the major presuppositions of personality theories, cannot be developed or tested utilizing scientific research methods. The reason for that is, as noted in the previous chapter, to deal with psychology from a scientific perspective, research psychology must be essentially analytical in nature, focusing on discrete aspects of the psychological makeup of the human being. We have to focus on some small issue. Though some of the work of research psychology involves physiology, for example, the study of the brain, most of it uses the tools of social science, such as experimentation using subjects, control groups, and statistical analysis in order to analyze the results. In order to do this experimentation scientifically, the scope of the theory being researched must be quite narrow. Consequently, the work of research psychology deals for the most part with narrow aspects of human nature. The broader the topic being studied, the less possible it is to deal with the topic effectively from a scientific perspective. Therefore, research psychology, if it is being done scientifically, typically deals with confined topics. By way of contrast, the practice of psychotherapy primarily revolves around personality theories that are macroscopic rather than microscopic in nature. Or to put it differently, while research psychology is analytical in nature, isolating various factors of the human personality in an attempt to understand some particular aspect of the person's psychological makeup, the personality theory is synthetic in nature, that is, explaining the nature of the individual as a whole. So researchers try to break the human makeup down into isolated parts, whereas those creating personality theories try to view it globally, view it as a whole, view it macroscopically. Therefore, we see that research psychology really can't create personality theories because personality theories are too big and broad. In addition, as we noticed in the previous chapter, researchers can't generate personality theories because many aspects of the personality are beyond the researcher's reach, such as emotions. They can study emotions indirectly, but not directly. So it is with the human volition and various other factors of the human makeup. So, as noted in the previous chapter, because of the complexity of the human nature and inaccessible aspects of human personality and also human bias, it's virtually impossible to research these more expansive concepts such as those contained in personality theories from a scientific perspective. One might think that personality theories have flowed out of the discoveries made by research psychology. That seems to be a general attitude. Well, these concepts, these personalities theories are scientific. However, this is not the case. For example, in the development of psychoanalysis, Freud did not do scientific research in order to formulate his theory. Rather, for the most part, Freud generated his theory by reflecting on his own therapeutic experience and developing hypotheses based on those reflections. Likewise, virtually all personality theories originate more from this type of intuitive process than from structured scientific research. This is not to suggest that no overlap exists between research and personality theories. The two are linked in several ways. First, there can be little doubt that the formulators of personality theories were influenced, at least to some extent, by contemporary research. In almost every case, these formulators were well-educated and knowledgeable people. Second, most formulators of personality theories have done at least some research in an attempt to verify the validity of their theory. Third, other researchers frequently do work in an attempt to determine the validity of various personality theories. Perhaps other links between research and personality theories exist as well. However, despite these links, it is important to reiterate that personality theories are predominantly not the product of psychological research, and that any connection that exists between personality theory and science is a rather loose one at best. The unscientific nature of personality theories has been noted by Duane Schultz, author of a number of enduring standard textbooks on psychology, especially in the area of personality theory. In his book entitled A History of Modern Psychology, Schultz makes the following observation regarding psychoanalysis. Quote, "The language of science is extremely precise and orderly, leaving no room for ambiguities, distortions, and vagaries. It seems that Freud did not speak the same language, that is, the language of science, and it is difficult to translate from one to the other." End of quote. Schultz goes on to query, quote, "What of the validity of psychoanalytic theory as a whole? It seems that, except in the broadest sense of the word, there is no such thing as a psychoanalytic theory. There is a large number of generalizations and hypotheses, but there seems to be no orderly framework of theorems, postulates, or precise relationships so necessary to a scientific theory." Close quote. In the absence of scientific support, Schultz concludes that, quote, "The reader of Freud must, in a sense, accept on faith the validity of his operations and conclusions," close quote. Especially germane to the topic of this lesson is the application by Schultz of this conclusion to personality theories in general. Quote, "All theories of behavior can, unfortunately, be criticized as somewhat lacking in scientific validity. As a result, a psychologist in search of a theory must choose on the basis of criteria other than formal scientific rigidity or precision," close quote. Not only are these theories not proven scientifically, but also some scientific evidence does exist that seems to disprove them by demonstrating their ineffectiveness. This issue will be addressed in a later lesson. Another indicator of the unscientific nature of personality theory resides in the multiplicity of these theories. One major book on personality theory indicates that there are some 250 distinct approaches to psychotherapy. If personality theory were scientific in nature, there would be a greater consensus. Though we find differences in medical approaches, we do not find nearly the same level of disagreement that exists in the field of psychology. Imagine if the medical field were debating over 250 distinct perspectives on the general functioning of the human body. There are certainly many differences of view regarding particulars in medicine, but there is a wide range of agreement on the basic issues. And here's where the contrast comes with psychology. The differences in perspectives among psychologists do not merely pertain to superficial or confined aspects of human nature, but have to do with the general understanding of the functioning of the personality. For example, behaviorists view the human being as functioning in response to its programming by society. Freud sees the human being as functioning in response to the influence of the unconscious. Rogers sees the human being as responding to the type of acceptance that the individual receives from significant others. Therefore, the practice of psychotherapy cannot be equated with the practice of medicine in that it is far more speculative and less scientific than medicine. Therefore, the dichotomy between research psychology and psychotherapy resides in the fact that while research psychologists seek to do their work using scientific methodologies, psychotherapy requires the utilization of a global personality theory that cannot be generated by means of scientific research. The inclination of those who advocate the use of psychology in counseling is to assert that psychology is scientific, utilizing as evidence the work of research psychology, and then applying this scientific credibility to psychotherapy. In other words, it's sort of the bait-and-switch approach. We know that psychology is scientific. Look at research psychology and you see that. And then they start to talk about psychotherapy as if it is equally as scientific, as if it's the same thing as research psychology, whereas, as we have seen, it is not. Rather, as we have seen, the personality theories used in psychotherapy are not scientific, and consequently, psychotherapy cannot make the same claim to being scientific, to scientific credibility, as does research psychology. This is not to suggest that all of the findings of research psychology are scientifically valid, but the prospect of their validity is far greater, and the research supporting them provides us with a basis for scrutiny. In other words, if we want to check whether they're scientific or not, we have a basis for doing so. We can look at the research. But as Schultz recognized, we must accept personality theories by faith. We must put our trust in them, not on the basis of science, not on the basis of research, but on basis of faith in the intuition of the originator, such as that of Sigmund Freud. This distinction between research psychology and psychotherapy manifests itself in a recent book on the relationship between Christianity and psychology entitled Psychology and Christianity, published by InterVarsity, and I've cited this book in, I believe, a couple of previous lessons. The editors of the book asked four contributors coming from different perspectives to address the issue of how Christians should view psychology. Each was asked to make a statement, and then the other three were given the opportunity to make a rebuttal. One especially revealing interchange included in the book is between a research psychologist and a clinically oriented psychologist, one who would be more involved in psychotherapy. The clinically oriented psychologist, in presenting his point of view, made this assertion, and I quote, "Unaware or unwilling to acknowledge that scientific psychology is fading fast, they," that is research psychologists, "continue to look for presumably objective, value-free, statistically analyzable data. Often that data comes filtered through selective perception and gives answers to irrelevant and obtuse questions that only a few researchers care about. Students want guidance about significant issues such as the meaning of life, the reason for our existence, the cause of our inner struggles, or where we are going. They discover instead that a scientific understanding of human behavior does not answer any of these questions. It can't." End of quote. This clinical psychologist is in essence making the same points that I have made above, that the work of research psychology is not materially connected with the work of psychotherapy, and that the major reason for this dichotomy is that the psychotherapist deals with more comprehensive issues that can't be addressed scientifically. He also implies that, as indicated earlier, the psychotherapist must have a comprehensive theory to do his work. He goes a step further, asserting that because research psychology is not equipped to address these bigger issues, that its value is limited and its influence is waning. This latter assertion regarding its waning influence appears to be incorrect. If anything, it seems that the influence of research psychology is growing. With developments in genetics, discoveries regarding brain chemistry, and the development of new psychotherapeutic medications. My major point here, however, is that this clinical psychologist recognizes that psychotherapy and research psychology necessarily represent two almost entirely distinct worlds. We find the research psychologist expressing agreement regarding this distinction between the world of research and the world of psychotherapy. The research psychologist admits that research psychology is not equipped to address the bigger issue. He observes, quote, psychological scientists agree that many important questions lie beyond the reach of science. Although psychological scientists help us answer some important questions, it cannot answer all questions. End of quote. And then this research psychologist notes that in teaching his classes, he warns his students, quote, bear in mind psychology's limits. He wants his students to realize that there are limits to the scope of questions that psychology can answer. While recognizing the limitations of his own sector of psychology, that is research psychology, the research psychologist goes on to devalue the primary personality theories that are utilized by clinical psychology. In other words, he says, my area of psychology, yes, it is limited, but the theories that your area of psychology uses, the theories of psychotherapy uses, the personality theories, he says, are not really valid. He maintains, and I quote, strict behaviorism and its associated logical positivism are now dead horses in scientific psychology, as are Freud and humanistic psychology. Taking the place of these three dead horses are cognitive science, neuroscience, cognitive neuroscience, and, at the turn of the millennium, behavior genetics, molecular genetics, and evolutionary psychology. End of quote. The three personality theories that the research psychologist refers to as dead horses are, in fact, the three most predominant personality theories utilized by therapists today: behaviorism, Freudianism, or psychoanalysis, and humanistic psychology, which is primarily the product of Carl Rogers. These three personality theories, as we will see, are not only widely used by secular psychologists, but also they are vastly influential among evangelical psychologists and have made significant inroads into evangelical thinking. We will describe and discuss these three personality theories in a later lesson. Therefore, the research psychologist is telling the clinical psychologist that the primary tools utilized in psychotherapy are considered to be scientifically invalid by the research community. He implies that as a result, the wave of the future is not found in psychotherapy with its bad personality theories, but in the findings of research psychology. We can see then that this interchange graphically demonstrates the primary point I am making in this section. There is a serious dichotomy between the work of research psychologists and psychotherapy with its dependence on personality theories. One does not flow out of the other. Personality theories are not the product of research psychology. Rather, to a great extent, these two major categories of psychological pursuit represent separate disciplines that only maintain a narrow channel of interaction. In fact, the exchange above gives the reader the impression that each of these psychologists questions whether the other is really doing psychology. Another point underscored by this interchange is the one made earlier in this lesson, that the personality theories utilized by psychotherapists cannot be viewed to be scientific. Both psychologists seem to recognize this point, arriving at their conclusion from different directions. The research psychology asserts that the big questions could not be answered scientifically, and that correspondingly, the prevalent answers to those questions, that is, personality theories, are in fact not scientific. The psychotherapist, in turn, by asserting that science could not provide the answer to the big questions people are asking and which therapists are seeking to answer, is in fact acknowledging that the personality theories that clinical psychologists, that psychotherapists utilize, are really not scientific. In other words, this clinical psychologist, in saying that research psychology can't answer the big questions, that science can't answer the big questions, seems to be admitting that the theories he uses really aren't scientific.